Good afternoon and welcome to Line 1, your health connection on KSK Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. Anyone who has encountered a high conflict person at work or in their personal lives knows well the pain of dealing with high conflict people. These people are often referred to as narcissists or borderlines. Their behavior can range from the odd and mildly bothersome to quite aggressive and irrational. A high conflict person thrives on conflict and emotional upheaval. Unable to recognize their own behavior and creating conflict, their lives are consumed with blaming others and validating their own positions and feelings. It's my pleasure to have Bill Eddy joining us to discuss the art of dealing with high conflict people. The first half of today's show will center on dealing with the high conflict person in the workplace. And after the break, we'll look at the challenges of divorcing a high conflict person. William Orr Bill Eddy is an attorney, therapist, and mediator, and the president of the High Conflict Institute in San Diego, California. He provides consultations and trainings about managing high conflict personalities to professionals, including attorneys, judges, mediators, therapists, and human resource professionals. He's presented in over 25 of the U.S. states and in Canada, Australia, France, and Sweden. He's on the part-time faculty at Pepperdine University School of Law and on the part-time faculty of the National Judicial College. Mr. Eddy is the author of several books, including two of the books we'll be talking about today, Splitting, Protecting Yourself While Divorcing Someone with Borderline or Narcissistic Personality Disorder, and his newest book, It's All Your Fault at Work, Managing Narcissists and Other High Conflict People. I want to remind listeners the way to reach us locally is to call 550-8433, or if you're outside of Anchorage, you can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way is to email us your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. We will do our best to get your questions on the air, so please feel free to call if you got questions for Bill about high-conflict people and how you deal with them. Bill, I appreciate you taking the time to join me today.
My pleasure, Prentice. I'm really glad to be on and glad to help.
All right. The idea for this show happened when I was attending your training on high-conflict people and divorce. And what motivated me really here is to have you on is how important and relevant the information is to everyday people in all sorts of settings. We've all likely run into high-conflict people in our lives and usually really baffled as to how to deal with them. What I like most was your ideas pointed out the insanity, really, of trying to change these people and provided me with a useful framework for addressing this in my own practice. I know you kind of wanted to steer away from talking about yourself too much, but I'd like for you to just take a minute and share with us, with our listeners, what you're doing at the High Conflict Institute and why you've chosen to really devote your life to this.
Well, basically, what I'm doing, and we now have some other speaker consultants, what we're trying to do is really let people know about the patterns of behavior of high-conflict people and how to manage your relationship with them, whether it's close or far, because exactly as you said, you're not going to change their personalities. That's one of the things people waste a lot of time trying to do. And instead, we have a lot of tips and tools and techniques for coping with them, as well as some explanations of what's going on and kind of how they think, so that it makes it easier for people to deal with them. So that's what we're doing as an institute. There's about eight of us involved. And personally, I've worked with families and kids all my life as a social worker, therapist, lawyer, mediator. And the thing I just see coming up all the time is conflicts that people don't understand. People catch them by surprise, and I want to help people so they know, don't be so surprised. Let's talk about what you can do.
Okay, now you mentioned your training. It's kind of unique in that you are a trained mediator, a licensed clinical social worker, and a lawyer, I believe, correct?
That's correct. Yes, that's family law.
That's don't the lawyer and the social worker sort of, isn't that counterintuitive? How do they go together?
It really seems like they're opposing poles. So I kind of kid that I must be bipolar. I have the social work pole and the lawyer pole.
Right.
But seriously, it's actually real helpful because there's things that social workers and lawyers can really learn from each other to help their clients and to help families. So it's really, I think it's almost should be required combination, but I'm not going to go that far.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of extra school.
Right.
So for the purpose of our discussion, let's kind of define a high conflict person. You mentioned behaviors or characteristics. What are we looking at behaviorally that identifies a high conflict person?
I think the most simple way to think of it is there's really four characteristics. The first one, and the biggest one that kind of hits people in the face, is they're preoccupied with blaming other people. It's just part of who they are. When something goes wrong, it's all your fault, is what they say. The second is that they have a lot of all or nothing thinking. They see a solution has to be all this way or all that way, usually all my way, is what they say. So they don't see gray areas very well. The third thing is, for some of them, is unmanaged emotions. They start screaming in the middle of a meeting, and you're going, whoa, what happened here? Nothing deserved that. Or they'll throw things or storm out, all of that. It's kind of unmanaged emotions. And the fourth is extreme behavior. They often do things that 90% of people would never do. And they often excuse it and say, oh, well, I was tired. Well, we're all tired some of the time, but we don't, you know, throw things just because we're tired, stuff like that. So it's those four characteristics: blaming others, all or nothing thinking, unmanaged emotions, and extreme behaviors.
It's the kind of behavior that everybody in the room kind of looks at each other and says, whoa, what was that?
Exactly. And if you're dealing with this at work, it often just comes out of the blue, and it may be a customer, it may be a coworker, might be a supervisor, and sometimes it's the owner of the business. So it's really about personality. It's this approach to life that's the problem rather than where they are.
So are we talking about personality disorders? I mean, do all high conflict people have personality disorders? Are we talking about the narcissist or the borderline, as in my intro, or is it features of? I mean, you hate to label people.
Right. And first of all, people shouldn't label people with this. It's something to think to yourself. Have what I call a private working theory. I think that person's a high conflict person, so I'm going to use a different strategy, kind of adapt my approach. But I think what we're talking about is personality disorders or features or traits of a personality disorder. There's a lot of overlap, but not all high conflict people have a personality disorder, and not all people with personality disorders have a high conflict personality. It's really a matter of degree, and if you use the methods we teach, it tends to calm people down, and they stop acting like a personality disorder if they're actually, you know, just have some traits. So we're looking at something that's related to personality disorders, but not necessarily a full disorder.
Okay. As far as numbers go in the general population, how many people like meet the criteria for having a high conflict personality versus like personality disorders? Like in any given day, how many of these people are we running into?
Well, first of all, let's start with the research on personality disorders, because that's what's had a lot of attention and a lot of research. And the manual that people use to diagnose personality disorders that mental health professionals use, and by the way, the average person shouldn't try to diagnose somebody with a personality disorder. Just think to yourself, high conflict person, I'm going to adapt my approach.
Don't ever say, I think you're a narcissist or a borderline.
Exactly. If you do that, you'll make your own life miserable, because they will really be out to get you now. They'll blame you, complain, they'll email about you, they'll do all kinds of stuff. But the reality is the research in the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual that mental health professionals use, the fifth edition came out last year, or 2013, says about 15% of the population meets the criteria for a personality disorder. Now, since high conflict people, there's overlap. Let's say about half of high conflict people have a personality disorder, and the other half maybe have some traits. I think it's about 15% also, but it's not the same 15%. It's some overlap, but not complete. So what that means is some people who are difficult and high conflict may be more responsive to dealing with them, especially using the strategies we talk about, whereas the more severe ones, it almost might not matter what you do, and you want to get away from the situation if you can.
All right,
but that's a lot of people.
Yeah, that's 1.5 if you can find a half a person out of 10 or 15 people out of 100. That's a good chance you're going to run into them eventually.
Exactly, and we think they're increasing. So I think if you haven't run into a high-conflict person and don't know what we're talking about today, within a year you probably will go, oh, yeah, that's what they were talking about.
You mentioned something I wanted to check on. They think they're increasing. What is the indication of that?
Well, there's research that indicates that personality disorders are increasing.
Okay.
And since there is this overlap, and let's take narcissistic personality disorder. That's one that most people have heard of by now. And while a lot of people with narcissistic traits stand out in society, they don't have a personality disorder unless they're not flexible enough to adapt their behavior, unless they can't really succeed, manage daily life. You know, personality disorder means you're really dysfunctional, that you're so distressed inside, or your social relationships are so distressed that something's not working. So a lot of people just think of as having traits. And if people with personality disorders are increasing, it looks like high-conflict people are. And narcissists are one of the leading personality disorders and one of the leading types of high-conflict people. So you're going to see more and more of them, I think, from what we've seen in the last 10 years.
High-conflict people, especially narcissists, tend to be pretty successful. They often rise up into positions of authority and power. Are there some historical examples of high-conflict people and their impact on history? I mean, I assume it's not always negative.
Yeah, I think to me, a lot of history is people with high-conflict personalities. So if you go back on narcissists, one of the favorites is Napoleon. He was full of himself, but he was also successful in a lot of ways, but as happens with a lot of narcissists, they build on success and finally reach the point of massive failure because they overestimate themselves and they have their own Waterloo or whatever. So Napoleon's a good one from the past, but I would say a lot of historical leaders have significant traits. But part of why they might still succeed is because the people around them manage them pretty well. And that brings me up to the present and one of the personalities we put in our book, It's All Your Fault at Work, and that was Steve Jobs. Hmm. He was really known by the people around him as having a very high conflict personality, but he was brilliant, and the people around him managed him so that the best parts of him came out and the worst parts of him were somewhat kept under control. So we talk about him in the book and how people managed him, and we think they actually did a pretty good job. But left on his own devices, he probably would have just run himself into the ground. But he, on his own, seemed to collect people who he could learn from and who would save him from some of his worst behavior. Mm. They would bring him into their office and say, Steve, right, you gotta calm down here.
So he was surrounded by some empathy, potentially.
Yeah, that people that liked him and tried to help him take off the rough edges enough so that they could succeed, and it seems like they really did. I mean, Apple just was insanely great, as he liked to say.
Yeah, Nick Saban at the University of Alabama is often referred to as a narcissist or a strong, you know, personality type. And they asked his defensive coordinator what it was like to play for him or work for him. He said, as long as you're doing your job, it's fine. Yeah, so
exactly right. I think it's that managing the relationship like you said at the opening of the show, is you're not going to change their personality, but you can manage how you get along with them if you're in a position where you can kind of do that. And a lot of times employees can actually manage their supervisors and coworkers can manage each other. But that's a question of degree. Sometimes it's too bad, too hard, and you just got to try to get some distance.
Okay, for those of you who might be tuning in late, my guest today is attorney, mediator, and social worker Bill Eddy. Our topic for today's show is dealing with and managing high-conflict people. You can reach us with your questions or comments about today's topic at our local phone number, 550-8433. You can call us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752 and email us with your questions at line1@alaskapublic.org. You can spell all that out. You have to spell it out, line one. All right, so your new book that just came out, and I read, I have to say, probably 75% of it before this. It's All Your Fault at Work, Managing Narcissists and Other High-Conflict People. It approaches it a little bit differently. Can you talk a little bit about the message in the book and why you wrote it?
Yeah, the idea was really to help people who often are just totally overwhelmed and caught off guard. Let's say there's an office bully or something, and you've just been hired, and suddenly this person's in your face angry. Where is this? What is that? Or maybe it's someone that you liked, and suddenly they've turned on you, because some of these personalities really suddenly will turn, and that catches people by surprise. So we want people to be more prepared and give them a set of tools that are really easy to remember. So the book really focuses on a method we call the CARS method, C-A-R-S. And these four tips that go with that can really help people respond and manage the situation. And so the C stands for connecting. That you want to try to connect with the person, unless it's dangerous, that the way you talk to them with empathy, attention, and respect forms a positive connection, even when they're in your face upset. You go, wow, I see how frustrated you are. Can we talk about this some more? I want to understand what you're thinking. So you can really connect. Then there's analyzing your options and sometimes helping the high-conflict person analyze their options. Then there's responding to misinformation, because these folks have a lot of misinformation. They distort information. It's kind of a spin. They're not out of touch with reality, but they really put a spin on it. And then there's setting limits, because high-conflict people don't set limits on themselves very well. So they just kind of barge in, and you know, they do things right that most people would restrain themselves. So we have to restrain them. So setting limits, if you're a manager on an employee who's high-conflict, but also if you're an employee with a high-conflict manager, there's strategies for setting limits on them. So that's the CARS method that we really, throughout the book, we get about 20 examples. I mentioned Steve Jobs, but we have just ordinary workplace examples, too, with someone at the lower level of a company, as well as managers. So that's C-A-R-S, connecting, analyzing, responding, and setting limits. That's it in a nutshell, but I can explain each of those a little more if you want.
What I really liked is that the ear statements that you mentioned in the book, connecting with ear statements in the CARS method, empathy, attention, and respect. I've really tried to do that in my own practice with some of the high conflict folks I work with, and they seem to respond to that. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it really speaks to, and we talk about it in the book some, is the way our human brain is, that kind of a, to some degree, there's a right and left hemisphere difference in how we relate to people. And the left brain is what we usually use to solve problems and reading and writing and all that stuff. But the right brain, the right hemisphere, pays more attention to nonverbal behavior, to facial expressions, tone of voice, all of that. So ear statements are empathy, attention, and respect statements that include something like that tend to calm the more defensive brain, which seems to be more in the right brain, according to researchers. So if you can calm the defensive brain by saying things that show empathy or respect, you know, you really did a good job on such and such. Or, you know, I really understand how you feel. I felt frustrated like that sometimes. Or, tell me more. I want to pay attention. I want to work. I want this to be a problem we solve together. Those kinds of statements are ear statements, and they really do tend to calm, seems like, that right side of the brain so the left side can problem solve. And it's fascinating to see whether the brain is exactly structured that way. I'm not a brain scientist, and what I read is there's still a lot of overlap. But if you're really speaking to calming kind of the tone of voice that you use, et cetera, I have experienced that. We've been teaching ear statements for about 8 years now. Over and over again, I see upset people calming down. And it's just, it's almost like magic. It's within seconds because they really feel that you really do care. You are listening. You do respect them. And that's all they wanted, especially high-conflict people. That's what they're looking for, really.
Yeah, I've found that empathy, attention, and respect works with anybody in almost any situation if they're upset or angry. Being heard and seen and, like, appreciated seems to make a huge difference to people in calming them.
Right. Oh, let me say something here that you triggered a thought, and that is that it doesn't matter if you think they're a high-conflict person or not. You can just use this method with anyone who's upset. You can use this with kids. You can use this with teenagers, coworkers, spouses, et cetera. So very good point.
Yeah, because it really is about connecting just with people and disarming people. And one of the things with high-conflict people, you mentioned the MAD statement and looking at the cars thing. Can you talk about MAD as it refers to in this book?
Yeah, we talk about actually what we call the cycle of high conflict thinking.
Yeah.
And there's three parts to that. The first part is they have a mistaken assessment of danger. So they think that somebody has put them down or is threatening their job or humiliating them or something. And so, or they think someone's going to abandon them or disrespect them. So it's MAD stands for mistaken assessment of danger. So that's the first part of the cycle of high conflict thinking. The second part then is they switch to behavior that's aggressively defensive. Since they think they're in danger, they think they're defending themselves. The trouble is what they do usually harms somebody else and harms their relationship. So somebody throws something or they start yelling because they think they weren't respected and that the yelling will get them a good attention, but in the process, they alienate people. So that's kind of the BAD, the behavior that's aggressively defensive. But then the third part of this cycle of high conflict thinking is very interesting, and that is negative feedback from the people around the person. And you would think, well, of course you're going to give them negative feedback. Look at how they're behaving. But guess what happens? If you do negative feedback, then that makes them feel that they're in danger. And that makes them feel like you are going to abandon them, disrespect them, humiliate them, dominate them, whatever their fear is. So the negative feedback about their past behavior tends to keep the cycle going rather than to stop the cycle.
So if you're saying to somebody...
That's why we suggest connecting with them instead.
Instead of saying, hey, I don't appreciate it when you talk to me that way or use that tone of voice with me. Just your inflection and your facial expressions and your mannerisms imply a threat, is what you're saying?
Yeah, and these folks are extra sensitive. So you might be able to tell an ordinary person, hey, your tone of voice just that you had right then really kind of offends me. And with an ordinary person, they go, oh, that's not what I meant. With these folks, they just escalate and they go, well, you know, your tone of voice really upsets me, and they'll attack you back. So it's better to stay calm and have them mirror you by staying calm and say, wow, I see how upset you are. You know, can you tell me more what's happening? What's going on? So that you're calming yourself, which tends to calm the other person, rather than attacking the other person with negative feedback and criticism. So you got to focus on the future rather than the past when you calm them. It's like, let's look at how we can solve this. Sounds like you're pretty upset. Let's look at what we can do now.
It seems like most people, high conflict people and people with personality disorders, are really fairly insecure. And that's part of why they don't accept a lot of feedback, because it I don't know what the word is, it puts them down, it makes them feel inadequate, it taps into that.
Yeah, part of personality problems is they go back to early childhood.
Right.
Personality is mostly developed by 5 or 6 years of age. After that, you're just kind of refining yourself. But if you go way back, people, you know, a lot of people grew up in insecure situations, so you got to have some empathy for them. Maybe they were abused kids or neglected, or maybe they were spoiled, you know, the entitled child that got whatever they wanted but never learned how to do anything because of that. So it really often goes back, and you're absolutely right. There's an insecurity, but they can't see it. They're blind to it, and you can't make them see it. That's why you got to use the CARS method to solve problems instead of just negative feedback.
So just for like real-time tips, how would you deal with a narcissistic boss or somebody who's a high-conflict boss if you're going in and working in that environment every day?
Well, I think, you know, when you can, you say, hi, how you doing? How was your weekend? Don't let yourself hide from them. When I've consulted with people and they say, I run into my office so I can avoid them, I say, no, try to connect with them. And I think of situations where people say, you know, I did that thing. I gave them some ear statements just out of the blue, and now I'm their favorite, and they're picking on somebody else. So I think finding things you can say that are positive, kind of always have something in your pocket, you know, boy, that was a great meeting, or good project, good job on that report. But it has to be true. Don't make something up. You don't want to overblow their ego.
Right. I was going to say, some people might call that
what they do.
Sucking up, or, you know, like, yeah, there's other words for that. But it's not really sucking up. It is finding things to be positive about and to say, like, real things that were good.
Yeah, exactly. I think of it as respect. Is think of what can I respect about this person, and don't think about it as sucking up. Think about it as being strategic. You know, when you're strategic, you make your life easier. When you're sucking up, you're just putting yourself down. But when you're strategic, it doesn't cost you anything to pay a compliment to a narcissist and then move on to, you know, set limits with them, correct misinformation that they may have. It's not the only technique. That's just the C, connecting with empathy, attention, and respect. You still have analyzing, responding, and setting limits. And usually if you're working with a narcissist, you got to do all four of those.
Yeah, and setting limits is really about, it's a difference between being assertive and good boundaries, correct, versus being aggressive and angry, because that won't resolve anything.
Right. So you set limits by just saying matter-of-factly, you know, I'm sorry, I can't do that. Or you've given me 6 projects that you want me to do this week. Given the time, reality, I can only do 2 of them. Which ones are your priority? Let's say that's your narcissistic boss. So they say, oh, you got to do this, do that. Just matter-of-factly set limits. Say, I can only do 2 of these. Which are your priority? Give them a choice so that they get thinking about their choice, not thinking about that you're not doing what they want.
Well, you're setting limits, but you're putting them back in power.
Yeah, when you give people a choice, they feel more powerful, and yet you've got them thinking about 2 choices that you can live with. It's like, which 2 projects do you want me to get done this week? I can get 2 of them done. Which 2 would you prefer?
What about as a boss, if you have that employee who is stirring things up and splitting and dividing and rumors and emails? What do you do with that?
I think you take the similar CARS approach. So you step aside with them, and we give examples of this in the book, and say, now, there's some things I want to talk about, how we can get things done more effectively here. And I'm interested in your opinion, too. So, you know, I see some things. Try to give them a compliment, give them a CARS empathy, attention, and respect statement, and then say, you know, we've got this we've got this problem I'd like us to work together on. Let's say you've got an employee that's coming in late or speaking obnoxiously to people, and you say, now one of the things that's one of the policies of this department is we're really trying to work on cleaning up how we speak to each other, so I need your help with this. We need to, you know, kind of rule out certain things that really don't fit in the workplace. Let's make a list of some things that probably wouldn't be good to say here. Can you help me with this? Make it a problem you work together on. The trouble with high-conflict people is when you really come down hard on them, they either act out worse or they quit and they leave you hanging. So you want to work with them. Make it a team effort. Now, if someone's behavior is really extreme, you're going to end up having to phase them out of the department and Right. maybe out of the company or the organization. But most of the time, high-conflict people, you can bring out the better side of them by sitting down and problem-solving. Let's make a list of something. Here's a list of some things I think we need to, you know, work on here. There's been research about how you give people negative feedback, and the conclusions tend to be that if you're focusing on the past, it's just going to blow up some of these folks. So you want to focus on what to do for the future. So with the analyzing of cars, analyze your options. Say, you know, we've got some things to work on here. I see two or three options here. What do you see? What are some things we could do to make it more effective so both of us could be happier and more productive?
All right.
The other thing
Real quick, before Jane, you're on there. Can you hold on through the break? Because we're at the halfway point.
I can. Yes.
Okay, that'd be great. We'll be right back in just a second. We're at the halfway point in the show, so let's go ahead and take a quick break. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on KSK Anchorage. Our topic today is high conflict people. If you want to participate, our local number is 550-8433. You can call toll free at 1-888-353-5752. Our email is line1@alaskapublic.org. After this short break, we'll continue our conversation with Bill Eddy. I'm Prentice Pemberton.
You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line 1, Your Health Connection on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Line 1, Your Health Connection on KSK Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just joining us, my guest today is the president of the High Conflict Institute in San Diego, California, Bill Eddy. We are discussing the art of dealing with high conflict people. I want to remind listeners that Dr. Woodard will continue to host our show 3 Mondays each month, and I'll be hosting a show the last Monday of every month on a topic relevant to emotional and mental health. Remember, email your questions or comments about today's topic to line1@alaskapublic.org. You can call locally at 550-8433 or toll free at 1-888-353-5752. Please remember, the show repeats tonight at 9 p.m., so if you're listening to this Monday night, you'll be hearing a taped recording, and we will not be accepting phone calls. Okay, before the break, we spoke with Jane, and I would like to go ahead and get her question on the air before we go any further. So, Jane, you're on the air with Bill Eddy.
Oh, hey, thanks. I work up on the North Slope of Alaska, and I don't know if you're from Alaska, Mr. Eddy, but it's a lot of men, and there's quite a lot of high conflict people up there, I would say. And if you haven't guessed, I'm a female, and I'm not passive, but I'm more anti-confrontational than most, and a very calm, very kind of sweet individual, but for some reason I have a hard time getting along with a lot of my high conflict coworkers, and I would guess that there's a higher percentage of them up on these oil fields. So I'm wondering if you have any tips for maybe a person who might be polar opposite of anti-confrontational to dealing with confrontational persons, because it seems like more than most, more than your typical person, I seem to kind of draw their ire.
Well, the first thing I would say is make sure not to take it personally, that it's really not about you. It's about the person who may be acting in a high-conflict way and not managing themselves quite in the balance that we think people should. When people are more isolated, some of this gets more extreme because there really isn't a lot of places to go and a lot of consequences. So I think, first of all, it really helps to not take it personally so you don't kind of beat up on yourself, gee, why me? Why do they pick on me? And that's true with anybody in a bullying situation. It's not your fault. It's the other person's responsibility. But with that said, we really developed this CARS method, connecting, analyzing, responding, and setting limits, to deal with situations like that. So one suggestion would be, is first of all, just staying calm, trying as hard as possible just to appear confident and not rattled by what they're doing, and just say, wow, having a hard day, huh? And then look at some alternatives if you have to deal with them as some choices, something you can give them as choices or something you can give yourself, like taking breaks or whatever. But in that kind of situation, you don't want to use avoidance too much because that actually encourages high-conflict people. And this is a modern issue. A lot of situations, for example, where women may be in a management position with a mostly male environment, we're seeing this a lot in the high-tech companies where women are really getting their feet more, settling in as being able to be managers and such. But I think if you were to look at the book, the CARS method, is think about alternatives, respond to misinformation. So when they say, well, you know what you're doing wrong, and you can say, actually, I think the correct information is such and such, or you may not realize it, but, and just give the straight information. Don't try to retaliate or be angry back in the same nasty way. Is actually stay calm, matter of fact, and a lot of people respect that, mostly because they see that they didn't get to you. So I think more than anything is think of some comebacks to just be able to stay confident and calm, but also set limits and say, you know, I need to go now. We're going to have to hang up, or I'm going to need to walk away. Or if you speak to me that way, I'm going to have to leave this conversation. But if you speak to me respectfully, I'm happy to stay. So you've got thoughts like that in your pocket. That's the short answer.
Yeah. Well, I like that because I do tend to avoid situations in which I, you know, perceive that a confrontation might occur, or if it's happened with a coworker before. And I think that does kind of, like you said, encourage it more so than help me avoid it.
You're exactly right. When people react defensively to high conflict people increase rather than decreasing their behavior. And that's often how you know it's a high-conflict person. So try not to feed into it. Just, if, like they say, fake it till you make it. Just pretend you're calm and confident, even if you aren't inside, and these folks tend to back off a little bit.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for the call,
sure.
Jane.
Good luck.
I think Jane is correct. It's a pretty intense environment up there on the slope, and lots of conflict and intense, you know, it's a serious job. There's a lot of people that know what they're doing and strong personalities. So it would be tough. But I do think, Bill, that your book and just really reading that and getting down and understanding that it's not personal. It's not ever personal. One of the things you said to me that was great was, how do you know when you ran into a narcissist? It's like that you feel inadequate.
Right. I go home from work sometimes and I go, boy, I'm incompetent. I should quit this line of work. And then I go, wait a minute. Did I deal with a narcissist today? When was that? Oh, yeah, 11 o'clock. There was so-and-so. Oh, that's why I feel incompetent. It's about them, not about me. So that's a warning sign. If you feel incompetent, you've probably been around a narcissist recently.
Yeah, I like that because they really do go on the attack and try to take you out and make you feel small. Okay.
But don't agree with them. Don't agree with them. It's, you can still tell yourself, I'm okay, and right. That's important.
Absolutely. One of the things I wanted to talk about in dealing with folks is the email. You devoted a whole book to what's called a Biff response, and I do want people to understand that and maybe look that up online and look at it on your website because it is a really neat tool for dealing with conflict in emails, whether it's in your personal life or professionally.
Absolutely. Yeah, let me tell you about that. This is something we developed about 8 years ago, and we've been teaching. We figure we've taught about 10,000 people this method, and it's so exciting. So the basic framework of it is brief, informative, friendly, and firm. So when you get a long email that just trashes you and says, you've done everything wrong, you know, what about this, what about that, is a Biff response, you know, maybe a paragraph at the most, you know, three or four sentences, just straight information. Don't get defensive. Don't respond to every detail they said. Just straight information. You may not be aware that such and such. Thank you for telling me your concerns. Here's some information that may be helpful. So it's almost, you're just almost completely reversing the energy that's coming at you. Some say it's like a jujitsu technique, is you just spin it around and say, thank you for responding or telling me your concerns. Here's some information that may be helpful. And it can't be defensive, angry, emotional, just straight information about something. And that it's friendly. So you say thank you at the end. You might say, you know, have a nice weekend, something like that. And it's firm in that it ends the hostilities so that you don't throw something back at them to then get more upset about. So by ending the anger or hostility, you're just, you know, and that's my point of view. Have a good weekend. Or you end it with two choices if you need information. Is please let me know by Thursday at 5 if you'll do XYZ or if I'll do something. So you give them two choices and a deadline if you need information from them. This is really helpful in the workplace, and it's really helpful in families, especially high-conflict divorce situations. It helps right. lower the conflict. And we've had a lot of people have success. They get these nasty emails, then they write back with a Biff response, and it's like they really look good. And the other person ends up sometimes writing back with a Biff response because they see how much better it looks. So let me just mention that we have that little book. It's called Biff, Quick Responses to High Conflict People. We also have a website called BiffResponse.com, and they can get a lot of information about that there, including some free articles.
Yeah, I had a lady who was dealing with a high conflict, just getting these emails over and over and over and over, and she was responding with equally wordy, lengthy debates about the merits of the points. And I introduced her to the Biff response, and she did it, you know, for like 2 weeks, and it was over.
Like yeah, it really shuts down the hostility from the other side.
It really works. So I would encourage people to check out that and learn more about the Biff response because it just empowers you to be to the point. Here's the facts. No argument. Good day.
Yeah, and you don't have to feel bad about yourself.
You no.
can feel proud of what you've written. The old way, people write nasty stuff back. They go, ooh, I felt nasty, like I was down in the mud too. This way, you stay clean. It's not rude. It's respectful, but it ends the hostility.
Nobody acts the way they do in a divorce in real life. I mean, do things that are quite embarrassing. I have a email here that I want to get to. It says, how do you cope with a parent who has been diagnosed as a narcissist, who had driven everyone away but is now aging and their life is truly falling apart? It's very hard to watch and almost impossible to become involved because of the blame level on everyone else but him. It's hard to enable that behavior, and at the same time, any help he wants is usually in the form of enabling. He has 8 children. Only a couple will speak to him. Emails are chronic blame games. What do you think, Bill?
Well, I think several things. I think this, the CARS method that you can still use in any setting, if you think, first, how can I connect with empathy, attention, and respect? Just try to empathize with people. Everyone's frustrated, and that's really what's underneath a lot of this. And look at what your options are. Analyze your options. Maybe narrow things to two choices. Please do this or please do that. But responding, the R of CARS is really responding to misinformation or hostility, and that's where we put the BIF method. So if you're getting a lot of hostile emails, here's a great opportunity to use BIF responses to help calm people down. Keep it brief. You don't have to put as much emotional energy into it.
Right.
And depending on who people are, you might educate them about this and actually say, you've learned about this method of calming upset situations, and you encourage everyone to use BIF responses. And then dealing with the aging narcissist directly is trying to find some things to connect about. It's interesting that what we see today is a lot of, as people age, what looked like, divorce and custody disputes were high-conflict parents fighting over their kids. And nowadays, we often see high-conflict kids fighting over their aging parents.
Hmm.
So it's not unusual. Let's say you've got three or four siblings, and one of them may be kind of high-conflict, and it just escalates everything. But I think using these methods can calm the situation, and actually a narcissistic parent may actually be calmer if the people around her can stay calm.
Right. The thing that I really like about what you said is that, and I think about with this email, is that you have an aging narcissist, as you said, their life is falling apart. For me, it's easy to find some compassion for that. That must be a fairly difficult thing to age as a lonely person. So connecting with people and hearing them and seeing their humanness is important in finding that empathy.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that the response that people have used to high conflict people tends to go to anger pretty quickly.
Right.
And this really surprises people. If you start out with empathy, attention, and respect, you get a whole lot less anger coming at you. It's not sucking up. It's being strategic. But it is empathy, and that's what high-conflict people are looking for. They just want, caring attention. They want to be respected, depending on their personality type. One may be more important than the other, but that's why ear statements work with everybody. You give them empathy and respect and pay attention. Calm things down. Your life will be so much easier.
Absolutely. Okay. We'd like to move on real quickly to divorce. And it seems to bring out the worst in people and seems to, do things. I've heard people talk in ways that I'm sure if they were on film, they would not want it to be seen. Why is divorce so difficult? Why does it create so much conflict?
Well, I think relationships are personal, close relationships really mirror a lot early childhood. And high conflict personalities usually develop in early childhood because personality disorders develop in early childhood. When people need a secure connection to a parent, and if an infant, say a year and a half old, doesn't have a secure relationship, a secure attachment, the mental health people call it, they may grow up to have a personality problem and become a high conflict personality. It is a risk factor for personality disorders. So we find a lot of people have this kind of insecure early childhood stuff. It shows up as insecurity in adult close relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So for some people, it's overwhelming. If husband or wife says, I'm leaving, it feels as if it was mom or dad when I was a year and a half old.
Abandonment.
But for the average, for the average person, it's still a close relationship, and that is more threatening to us. So people with ordinary personalities start looking like high-conflict personalities, and people with maybe some personality disorder traits start looking like they have a full disorder when they go through divorce.
All right. We got some phone calls coming in, so I want to get to some of these. We have Lou. You're on with Bill Eddy.
Hi. I don't mean to sound like gotcha or anything, but I was listening to your description of how to approach a high-conflict person when they're making demands. I recently walked away from a job with a boss like that, and I had employed those techniques dealing with her. No emotion, no accusation or anything, and that only made her escalate. I really couldn't figure out how to approach this individual, and I walked away from a really good job because of it. After I told her what really warm place she could go to in the calmest voice I could muster.
Well, let me say a couple things. First of all, there's some people that we can't reach, that no matter what we do, if you're perfect, are still going to be really, really difficult. So I think it's important to know sometimes you do have to choose to separate yourself from the situation for your own mental health. And some people that work with dealing with bully situations, like the Bully Institute, really says in a lot of situations you just got to get out as fast as you can. So I think that's one piece. But the other is, I don't want to imply that there's no emotion, that when we talk about connecting with ear statements, it's calm emotion that actually does address what seems to be the experience of the other person. So when someone's angry, it's being able to say, wow, I see how frustrated or upset you are. Let's talk about this, what might be going on. I want to understand. So that I'm not saying no emotion, not saying no, like, interaction, really. So with some people, if it's too abrupt, it's harder and they get more upset. Sometimes the ear statement, when you really connect with them, they calm down. But I do want to say that I appreciate your situation, and it's quite possible that any way that you did that still might not have really worked with that person. Some people really want to be angry, and especially if they're a supervisor, it's really hard to live in that environment. And sometimes it's not safe to try to connect with them. It's better to look at your options for getting away from them. So I appreciate that. It's very difficult.
Well, this person was very much of a scapegoater. Before she landed on me, she had run off two other employees, and I really wonder who has left since then. Scapegoating is a really special kind of difficult person to deal with.
It is,
and
very much
a characteristic of the high conflict people is they're always blaming somebody else, and especially for their own mistakes and their own errors, and that's not a good sign. So I'm glad you're out of that situation, and hopefully finding. Most people don't do that. That's not a healthy way to live.
Well, I was close to retirement anyway. I'm in the process of starting a new chapter in my life, and two more months of that just wasn't worth the salary.
No, you don't need that, Lou. I appreciate the call. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Diane, you're on the line with Bill Eddy.
Hi. I'll make this quick and then take my answer off the air. Can you talk about some of the traits of these high conflict people who may not have ever exhibited in earlier life, but perhaps later in life began to exhibit them, and its relationship, if any, to maybe Alzheimer's?
I'll just briefly say that anything can affect people's personalities. Drugs can affect other physical problems in the brain, and that they have similar issues like that, and similar methods seem to help. I've heard from people dealing with family members with Alzheimer's that say this kind of method, the CARS method, seems to help with them because you're still giving them empathy. Often you're giving a choice, you know, A or B, you know, let's look at, you could do A now or B now, which one do you want to do? So it's not very complicated. And having to set limits, especially, you know, how far people can go, that they can't just wander. Sometimes people with Alzheimer's, they get out of the house or out of a facility, they just wander. So you got to have more kind of physical barriers. But I think the general principles are similar, and that may be true for people who had an ordinary personality but then developed an illness. So that's a tough situation, but I think similar approaches. But I'm certainly not an expert on Alzheimer's, and I would encourage you to talk to someone who is to get more information on that.
All right, Bill, can you, we didn't get a chance really to get to your other book, Splitting, Protecting Yourself While Divorcing Someone with Borderline or Narcissistic Personality Disorder. Can you speak to that just for a couple minutes and why people should check that out if they're going through a divorce with somebody?
Yeah, whether somebody you think you're going through with has a borderline or narcissistic personality or just might be difficult, that book really focuses on how to respond to, again, high conflict personality or personality disorder, but also how to navigate the family court system in the process, because often a reasonable person may be really caught between a high conflict personality and the family court process, and both of those tend towards all or nothing thinking and tend towards a lot of extra emotion. And so it's important to look at how to navigate that. So we wrote that book as the lead author of that with Randy Krager. And the workplace book, I was lead author with Georgie DeStefano. But the book with Randy Krager, Splitting, we really look at how to manage things and what to expect. We're really pretty good at predicting a lot of the difficulties. But how to find a lawyer you can work with, how to get a counselor to help you cope while you're going through it, and just how to stay calm. Staying calm is one of the key things with all of this in the workplace or in the family. And the CARS method, you can use that method in a high-conflict divorce situation, although we give more specifics to divorce in that book, Splitting.
All right.
So
got one more quick call. David, you got about 10 seconds.
Well, yeah, in a personal relationship with a personality conflict, like the dynamics in it, are the same principles apply, or is it too much energy within a personal relationship to apply that stuff?
All right, thanks, David.
I think this similar approach, if you think of the CARS method, which we talk about in the It's All Your Fault book, I think it really will help you in any relationship. The idea is staying calm, not attacking the other person, but looking at options, responding to misinformation, and setting limits when you have to.
All right. We are out of time. My thanks to today's guest, Bill Eddy, president of the High Conflict Institute in San Diego, California. Please check out his website, thehighconflictinstitute.com, for a wealth of literature, information, and links on this topic. They have a lot of articles. We also have a variety of links and information on today's topic on our webpage, alaskapublic.org. A lot of research and effort is going into finding the cause of autism. Our next guest, Dr. Irva Hertz Prechateau of the University of California Davis Mind Institute, has found evidence that environmental chemicals may play a role. So why not tune into Your Health and learn more Monday, February 2nd at 2 p.m., repeating the same evening at 9 p.m., on FM 91.1 KSK Anchorage. Pat Yak is the Chief Content Officer for Public Media. Evan Erickson was our web editor and audio engineer for today's show. I'll remind listeners that you can podcast today's show along with all of KSK's other great programs by going to alaskapublic.org and clicking on the link to your favorites. Once again, from all of us at Line One, we appreciate you taking the time to listen. I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a great day.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.